My name is Dario Hasenstab. I'm here with Balder Hagrids, and we are back with the Western Bubble podcast, and so are the markets. Balder, the markets are back, and we're going to use this episode to talk about a variety of different factors attributed or connected to it, right? So first, we'll talk quickly about what Trump announced now this week. But we do want to move away from Donald Trump. So we promise to our listeners we will only talk about maybe the first 10, 15 minutes about it. And then we want to talk about establishment politics and why being reasonable is actually stupid.
Indeed. Well, hi, Dario. Good to be here again, as always. Talking about establishment politics is basically a backdoor way to still talk about Trump as well. Basically, the argument I made to you a couple of days ago when we were talking about the topic of this podcast, I said, look, it's really frustrating to see the way that establishment Europe is speaking about the United States and is thinking about the United States, and they kind of need a hard break. So what you see more and more is that sort of the remnants of the neoliberal establishments that are still very much in charge in Europe and many other countries around the world are not capable of basically providing radical new solutions, even in a situation of crisis like what you see now with Donald Trump happening. And that is frustrating to see, and I thought we should unpack that a little bit in this episode.
Absolutely. So what happened is that on Monday, I believe, or Tuesday, Trump announced a pause, a 90-day pause on most countries that he previously put tariffs on, except China. Apart from the fact that that 10% base tariff is still applying to everyone, but he kind of put a pause, and that immediately caused an absolute scene at the markets, and the markets shot up again, and everyone was happy.
For about one day, and then people realized that actually there's still this enormous uncertainty hanging over the markets. It is very clear that there are these radical changes occurring in the global economy, right? The United States withdrawing as the indispensable nation in global economics and global financing is going to have lots of very long-term repercussions. Investors are going to have to reevaluate what to do. And crucially, and that is something that has driven Trump to do what he did, much more so than anything that China or Europe can do to Trump, is that the bond markets basically gave up hope, right? The bond markets were, especially on Tuesday, they were at a moment where real panic hit. There was a real sense that bond markets were essentially about to collapse basic economic processes of government lending, mortgage rates, and those kinds of things. And at that moment, Trump said, okay, there was too much pressure on him and he needed to give in.
Balder, who are these bond markets you're talking about? I know about the stock markets, right? That's where, I don't know, I can buy Coca-Cola without actually then owning Coca-Cola. But who are these bond markets?
So bond markets are essentially the people or countries lending to governments. We're now specifically talking about US Treasury, so US Treasury bonds, saying, okay, for the next 10 years, I will give you $1,000, and in 10 years' time, you pay me back $1,000, and in the meantime, I get a fixed interest rate. So I'll give you $1,000 now. Every year, I receive 4% interest rates on that, and after 10 years, I get it back. It's basically lending to the US government in the case of Trump, what we're talking about. There's in itself nothing particularly complicated about that, but where it gets interesting is that typically in times of economic uncertainty, stock markets crashing or doing badly, people run to bonds. People want to buy more bonds. Why? Because you're not dependent on how Coca-Cola is doing with respect to its profit line. You're not dependent on speculation. You know you're going to get your money back, and in the meantime, you're going to get 4% interest rates. However, what happened this week is that initially people started buying bonds, because they thought, okay, the stock market's unreliable, it's uncertain, it's crashing, let's get certainty. And then people realized that, hang on, what's actually happening now means that bonds are not that certain because we can't trust the United States. Will they be able to pay back 10 years down the line? The way that Trump is operating right now might mean that at some point there might be some kind of default. And so you saw what they call yields going up significantly. And what does that mean when yields go up significantly? Instead of paying $1,000 for a $1,000 loan, you're now paying, you're going to pay less money in order to get that bond because you're no longer relying on the United States paying that back. So you're uncertain about their ability to pay back, which means that the yields go up. Basically, you now, let's say, pay $900 for a bond. You know that 10 years down the line, you get $1,000 back. And that means that you make more profit on it as long as the US government pays back your money. Typically, when yields go down, that means that people have confidence in the government. And when yields go down, that means that it's much easier for the US government to actually borrow money because they have to pay less interest rates. Their bonds are in demand, and therefore it's cheaper for the United States to refinance its debt. Now it's the other way around, and so it becomes much more expensive for the US government to refinance its debt. And on Tuesday, there was a real moment of panic that people believed that if this would go on for much longer, and we're talking about a few hours, maybe a day longer, then it could have gotten into a deeply vicious circle where the US had to refinance by paying much higher interest rates, therefore creating more uncertainty about their ability to pay back, creating higher bond yields, and basically collapsing the market.
So you're telling me that there were some real outside pressures of the real world with consequences that actually made Donald Trump change his mind instead of that kind of 3D chess plan that he has to make the billionaires in his circles happier? Because, I mean, right earlier when I asked you the question, or when I said that everyone was happy, there were a lot of people that were very happy, right? And there's even this video that circulated of Trump standing in the Oval Office, pointing at basically friends saying, oh, he gained $2.5 billion today. He gained $900 million today. Because, I mean, it really seemed like he was encouraging insider trading. I mean, he even told basically everyone who pays to see his messages 4 hours before everyone that, hey, it's a good option to buy right now. So it's not this like 3D chess plan that Trump has to make his billionaire buddies like richer. He really just had to basically budge to all these outside bond market pressures.
Yeah, it's hilarious, right? That US president could actually affect the real world in negative ways and that the real world lashes back. This is also one of those cases where people seem to have difficulty coping with two realities coexisting with each other, right? I would be amazed if there hasn't been any inside trading over the past week. It's so obvious that a lot of people on the know, including, by the way, congressmen, Democratic congressmen, senators, there's lots of stories about them selling right before certain announcements, before Trump went and said, we're going to put this moratorium on the tariffs for 90 days. It is completely obvious that there is inside trading. That doesn't mean that this is some kind of brilliant plan of Donald Trump. I've also seen all those videos where people said, oh no, you don't understand, Donald Trump is trying to get interest rates down and thereby making it easier to deal with the significant US debt, which stands at about 120% of GDP. Now, the problem with that is that this has now been completely exposed because the bond markets, as I just explained, put interest rates up. It has become more expensive this past 2 weeks for the US government to borrow money. So yes, there is corruption. Yes, there is inside trading. At least I would be amazed if there isn't, knowing what we know about the current administration and how Washington works in general. It's extremely dodgy. But at the same time, it is completely obvious that the emperor has no clothes, that Donald Trump and his surroundings basically have no proper policy process. They have no proper strategy in what they're trying to do. It's all intuitive. It depends on day-to-day issues. And any economist with a little bit of foresight would have told Trump 2 weeks ago, whatever you're going to do, please don't do it. But of course, they're not listening to proper economists or proper financial experts. And I don't think anyone who is even a little bit serious about analyzing this can now claim that there's some kind of grand strategy or plan behind all of this. It's very obvious that there isn't.
Moving on from this to the one country that Trump actually excluded from this 90-day pause, and also basically the second biggest creditor of the United States, right? Talking about China. China and the United States, right? It started out with 34% of tariffs, right? That, that basically Trump added to the, I think it was 20% existing ones. As of this week, I'm so sorry, I can't even stay serious. China has raised tariffs on US products up to 125%, and the United States is currently basically at 145% on Chinese imports. These are very high numbers, and they are above 100%, so my brain is hurting a little bit. And I mean, next week when we record again, are we going to look at 300%, 400%, 600%?
The answer to the last question is probably not, because Trump has already, in his Trumpian way, kind of indicated that he's willing to talk to the Chinese. But come on, it is just so silly. From both sides, by the way, not just from Trump, also from the Chinese side. It's like two school children shouting each other about whose father is the strongest or something like that. It's just really, really weird, and it absolutely makes no sense whatsoever what they're doing. It's childish, it's silly, and it doesn't make, you know, it's not going to be sustainable in the foreseeable future. So I who knows, but signs are that this also cannot last, because all of a sudden financial markets, after that initial bump of saying, okay, at least trade with Europe is okay, trade with the rest of the world is okay, started realizing that, first of all, the uncertainty still lingers. We still don't know exactly who's in charge and why they're doing what they're doing. But secondly, China is absolutely fundamental for some of the companies that were hardest hit, right? I mean, Apple has been an enormous victim of all of this. I mean, not that I feel sorry for Apple, very little sympathy. They should start paying their taxes first. But the Apple and Nvidia and others are incredibly dependent on China and this trade. So, you know, for their supply chains, right? So the idea that now all the problems are solved is, of course, insanity. As long as China and the United States play this little silly game, it's going to continue.
One interesting observation, basically there was a news announcement that sparked an observation. There was this news item that Apple actually chartered 4 airplanes to fly a bunch of iPhones from China to the United States on time before the tariff started. And that got me thinking. I remember, writing an essay for you at some time when I wrote down that the average kind of time it takes for a good to reach China to the United States is somewhere between like 6 to 8 weeks, right, via ship. And that a lot of people probably and companies have made purchases a few weeks ago that are about to arrive in a few days, and they're just looking at these numbers going up because you're paying these tariffs not the moment they basically leave China, but the moment they arrive in the United States. So you made a purchase 6 to 8 weeks ago, let's say worth 10,000 euros, that now suddenly the price has more than doubled because you need to pay 145% tariffs.
Yeah, and then the key here, and still there are way too many people who don't seem to understand this, is that you as a consumer are going to be paying this, in the sense that it's not the Chinese government who pays these tariffs. It's not some kind of outside foreigner. Companies who do the importing have to pay the tariff, and they're going to pass it on to you as a consumer. And the result of this is that in the next few weeks and months, a lot of American consumers are going to pay prices way higher than they expected. All of a sudden, because of Trump. And so this idea that this is some kind of well-thought-out strategy in order to make sure that America protects its economy, protects its citizens, is complete insanity. The first and foremost victims of what you just described and this broad narrative that we've seen over the past 2 weeks is the American consumer. The American consumer is going to pay by far the highest price of all of this. At the same time, you see other countries trying to create supply lines that don't require the United States. So other countries are trying to mitigate the damage, right? Europe is now talking to China. China is talking to Brazil and South Africa. Everyone is trying to create some kind of global economy that doesn't require the insanity of the White House.
It's crazy. I mean, in my years at university, the number one thing I was taught is the Bretton Woods system, right? And how, you can almost call it, from a US perspective, you can almost call it genius the way this was set up. And that guy is really tearing it down within weeks.
And that's exactly the point I was making at the end of last week's episode. It's difficult to understand if, you know, if you're not an expert, and there's no shame in that. I mean, international relations and the global economy, the financial world, are difficult things to properly understand. But it is absolutely incredible how a system that was so geared, so beneficial towards the United States, the US economy, so useful if you're an American consumer, is now being torn apart under the guise of, we're protecting Americans. Now, the system that was in place was the best system that any country could ever hope for. The United States was in this exceptional position where American consumers got benefits that no other group of consumers got around the world. And the way this is being broken down faster than anyone could have imagined is astounding. And the fact that Americans aren't mass protesting, that there isn't a million person march on Washington to stop this insanity, to me is just, well, I can kind of understand it, but it is horrifying. If I were an American right now, I would be outraged, not just about Trump or the White House, but also just the system around me that doesn't protect these incredible benefits that previous generations build up for me.
I think we should highlight why we as the Western Bubble Podcast aren't celebrating at the moment. Because theoretically, this is going according to the plan. I mean, not that we've put out a plan on, hey, let's take everything down. But the reason I think why we aren't celebrating is because all of this has happened so quickly, and therefore taking a lot of, there's a lot of victims that I think could be replaced, right? So if a country like Vietnam can now no longer export to the United States, or because it's so expensive, people in Vietnam will suffer because they depend on these exports. So I think that, right, theoretically, on a systemic level, I think we are welcoming what we're seeing. Good job, Donald. Thank you for listening to the podcast. But unfortunately, these changes, and given that how rapid they're taking place, or how rapidly they're taking place, are just hurting too many people today.
Yeah, and I think it's important to clarify here that you're absolutely right that we are in principle happy about the idea that, one, the Western world gets taken down a peg, that the Western world basically comes down to reality and understands that they can no longer take the world on this merry liberal democratic rave party that they've been on. That is good news, that the rest of the world gets more space to develop their own systems and their own dynamics that don't depend on this kind of Western bubble arrogance. That's great. And it's really good news that the United States and Europe are separating, and that they just, not in any antagonistic way, I would like the United States and Europe and South Korea and Japan to maintain really good relations, but no longer form this common front in which they somehow believe that they are sharing this destiny and that the United States can take Europe into a merry 21st century as the leader of the free world. Those things are really good in itself, but exactly what you're saying, there is nothing good about what's happening right now because of the actual real-life damage that's occurring, not just to Vietnam, but certainly countries like Vietnam are kind of collateral damage here, but also just to people in Europe, and especially people in the United States. It's not as if the United States is in a luxurious position where it doesn't have any problems at home. You know, poverty in the United States is increasing rapidly, and it's only going to get worse because of these past couple of weeks. There's nothing happy about that. There's nothing good about that. There's nothing good about the United States suffering. We should all want the United States to do well. We want Europe to do well. We want China, Japan, everyone, India, everyone to do well. And this kind of chaotic kind of anarchy that we're seeing right now, and the lack of planning and the lack of serious policy making, is so, so deeply damaging. This is also one of the reasons why I think anyone in their right mind should always oppose revolution. Revolution is terrible because it never gives the outcomes that you're hoping for. So even if there's oppression, even if there's true darkness in terms of governance, absolutist 18th century France, right? Look at what the French Revolution did. 4 years of absolute chaos and destruction and violence, followed by dictatorship, by Napoleon, who then went into this on this enormous age of conquest and military destruction. Revolution and chaos like this are never a good thing, even if they deal with problematic, destructive dynamics that are there at the core of the system.
I want to invite the listeners to go with me on the path of trying to throw Balder off his game. Balder, after like this passionate speech he just gave about going against revolution, then I assume the best way kind of to govern would be the reasonable, straight down the middle, we're not trying to offend anyone way that the Europeans are approaching these tariffs.
So Europe is getting a little bit of credit at the moment. The von der Leyen's of this world are getting credit. Because, you know, they said, look, we're going to wait and we're not going to immediately act like China. And we're gonna see and if Trump is willing to negotiate, is willing to become a little bit more reasonable, we're going to be the adults in the room. That was their approach. Now, dirty little secret is that the Europeans also couldn't agree on measures, and that's why it took longer. So then they tried to package it under the guise of, hey, we're trying to be reasonable here. But in reality, there were some serious differences in Brussels about how to approach this. But why I unfortunately do not give that same credit to the Europeans, and certainly not to the von der Leyen's of this world, is that from my perspective, it should have been the reverse with respect to China, right? So I don't understand why China behaves as if they are mortally offended. And this is like an ego thing where, like I said, two school children shouting at each other without any sense. When China should have said, no, look, we're a little bit bemused by what the White House is doing. And of course, we're going to have to put some counter tariffs, but we are open to conversations. And we hope that Donald Trump comes to his senses as soon as possible, because we are the adults in the room. We are one of the two large nations in this world. And we don't see any reason to have to get into this kind of fight with the United States. We welcome cooperation and we're open. If Trump wants to talk, we are here to talk. That should have been the Chinese approach, because they are a global power that actually is highly dependent on the global economy functioning well. Europe, on the other hand, should have been a little bit more according like what China did. Instead, they should have been a little bit more outraged and upset about this. Like, how dare you behave to us like this after all these years of friendship? Because Europe doesn't have this global superpower status. Europe doesn't have this strategy of trying to make the global economy center on Europe. It's not going to happen, and they don't have to. And it is important for Europe to have a vision that doesn't require the United States anymore. So whereas China should welcome cooperation with the United States and say, hey, Donald Trump, you're going through a strange phase. Know when you're ready to talk and we'll talk. Europe should have said, hey, Donald Trump, you're clarifying something that we've been feeling for the past 2 decades. We are very upset about this. We feel deeply hurt. We trusted you. We trusted you, well, the United States, with the war on terror. We trusted you with respect to Ukraine. We trusted you in the 1990s. You've broken this trust. We're now going to sit in a corner and sulk for a little bit. Don't talk to us for a while. And maybe once we are over our initial emotional reaction, we will reestablish relations in a new world order kind of way. That would have been much better for Europe, and that would have been much better for China.
So should I have engaged in a tit-for-tat in kind of getting the tariffs up to 145%?
I would have loved it. Of course, it was impossible, because within Europe, there are countries that would have vetoed that. The Netherlands, my country, would never have accepted that, for example. Germany would have had difficulty with it because of economic interest. But it is time for the European establishment to understand that they can't continue this neoliberal, supposedly reasonable approach to transatlantic relations. It is time for Europe to formulate a vision for a world order where Europe and the United States hopefully have pleasant, friendly relations, but where Europe no longer accepts this transatlantic alliance in the old shape. And I hate the fact that the European establishment tries to cling on to this neoliberal vision and tries to cling on to reasonableness. They need to basically break up with the United States for a while, and then in the future, they can go back and Washington and Brussels can cooperate in any way possible from a different foundation.
Well, unfortunately, I mean, I believe that this right, this approach that you would have liked to see, it wasn't possible simply because Europe ultimately, right, or European countries, I mean, we speak of Europe as a nation, right, so those 27 European countries, because if you basically escalate the tariffs up to 145%, that's going to be really expensive for your own citizens at some point. And I'm not sure how long these citizens would stand by you, because, yeah, sure, for a few weeks, there might be this anti-Trump, anti-American sentiment of, okay, you know what, we'll also start to buy local, right? Just as the Canadians did with boycott US products and buy Canadian. But then at some point, your movement kind of loses steam and people are just really upset about how expensive everything is getting.
Yeah, well, I should clarify, of course, as we said at the beginning when we talked about China, it's completely silly and childish the way that these tariffs have been going up between China and the United States. That's just silly. But I would claim that it's unlikely that this continues in long term because it's not sustainable for either one. China can't afford this and the United States can't afford it either. So basically, I'm not arguing that Europe should have just gone, okay, and we'll put another 50% tariffs. And then Trump goes, okay, we'll put another 50%. And it goes like that. That is silly. That doesn't make sense. But I would have really loved the European language to be clearer and for them to have imposed actually the list of tariffs that they had prepared, right? Europe has this list prepared. Funnily enough, and I think that is hilarious, trolling, targeting the red states, targeting the Trump supporting states mostly, right? Trying to say, hey, look, we're going to hurt the voters who voted for Trump to make clear that Trump is not in their best interest. I think that's hilarious. That's great. They should have implemented that list. That wasn't 145, but it was a retaliatory measures. And they should, for good measure, have used some strong language about this. Like Donald Trump, White House, United States, we cannot accept this. A little bit along the lines of how Canada has reacted, right? Now, for Canada, this has also been domestically, politically convenient. But I do not understand why European leaders find it so difficult to say, we are going to stand up for Europe. We are going to stand up for our interest. And that means that we're going to have to break up with the United States for a while. Specifically because there is broad support in opinion polls for this. Now, you're saying rightfully so that, you know, that might lead in a couple of months' time or a couple of weeks' time to European consumers, you know, pay the price. Well, it would be much less so than American consumers. American consumers are paying a much higher price for this. European consumers are less dependent on the United States than the United States consumers are dependent on Europe. But on top of that, sometimes you as establishment need to actually provide a new vision and need to say, okay, look, if this is going to be a little bit tough for a couple of weeks or months, fine, but we need to call out US bluff. And once they start taking us seriously again, we can have negotiations and we can go back to the table. But don't forget that this comes after the whole signal thing that we also did an episode on, where it was completely clear that the JD Vances of this world, the Hegseths of this world, absolutely hate Europe. This idea that we can maintain a good relationship for now is complete nonsense. It needs to rebalance. It needs to be restored.
This goes back to the discussion about, right, the difference between leadership and management that we keep on coming back to in this podcast, where it's basically your managerial style of saying that, okay, we will kind of manage things, right? We first of all need to manage our 27 like different opinions, and we will kind of manage. Like, we'll try to manage Donald's face. And then leadership would be to do exactly what you did, right? Kind of giving a clear goal for 10, 15 years down the line, and also a clear path there. And that's, I had an interesting conversation, or actually two or three interesting conversations with just like your typical like business leader CEOs here in Germany, right? Or like in the past few days. The realization or kind of the conclusion of that was that leadership is making a really unpopular choice and kind of say, or decision, and saying that, hey, in 9 years, there will no longer be any gas, right? And then right, for you to produce, for you to heat your homes and so on. And that will be really unpopular for 5-6 months. However, from a business perspective, that's actually preferred over the kind of back and forth and not really having a clear vision, because you know exactly, okay, this is a really like unpopular decision. I really don't like how this is going, but this person is a strong leader and will go through with it. And now I at least have, right? Okay, I at least have a horizon that I can look at and say, okay, this is where I need to get. How do I get there? And that was a very interesting realization on my end, is that people do prefer leadership over kind of that managerial style, because at least there is a clear cut answer and I need to meet that. And I might be unpopular, I might be angry with you, but at least a decision has been made.
And especially in this kind of situation, I think that's a very fair point that you're making. And that's exactly where Europe is at right now. So that management only ever made sense if the 21st century was going to be this liberal, democratic, capitalist nirvana. But we know that that's not going to happen. We know that the transatlantic alliance is not sustainable. And so it's much better to tell the world, your consumers, your markets, okay, this is going to be a period of pain, but there's light at the end of the tunnel. Prepare for the future. And that means that for now we have to pay a price. It's not going to be pleasant. We will see if we can sort of alleviate the pain associated with it. But by paying this price, we are setting ourselves up for a better tomorrow. And that's exactly where now the financial markets are struggling so much. Why, after 1 or 2 days of kind of trying to recover, the markets now are in a dark place again. Because they understand that there is no clear tomorrow. There is no clear vision, not from the White House. Obviously, Trump creates enormous uncertainty because nobody knows what he's going to do on Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday. But there's also no certainty coming from the European Union. What does Europe actually want right now? So, okay, so there's a 90-day moratorium. How do they view their relationship with the United States? What do they think the next 20 years with respect to the United States are going to be like? And that kind of lack of leadership and trying to somehow manage a system that no longer functions is deeply, deeply detrimental. And you said exactly right. Have some pain right now, as long as we know why we're going through that pain, and people will respect that.
Unfortunately, I believe we have reached that, the famous fine line, because that's exactly what Trump said. Right? He said, oh, there will be some darkness now, but all of this will liberate us, right? It's Liberation Day, and there's a very bright light at the end of this tunnel.
Oh dear, so I'm actually now sounding like Donald Trump. That is a dark moment in my life. No, but of course, the difference between what I'm arguing and Donald Trump is that Trump had no consistent, coherent message of what the world 10 years down the line needs to look like. It never made any sense what Trump said about the future. But Europe can formulate a future that makes sense and that has friendly relations with the United States, friendly relations with China, friendly relations with Sub-Saharan Africa, where Europe actually provides a vision of who they want to be, and that involves not being dependent on Washington's whims. And if Donald Trump actually had some kind of consistent message, if MAGA in some way made sense, make America great again based on some kind of true plan, true strategy, then he might have a point, because the United States does face serious problems and they do need radical answers. But Trump's answers are not actually any solutions in any way. They're just weird, intuitive, knee-jerk reactions that are not thought out in any way, shape or form, and that do not provide any clarity to neither markets or to consumers. And so there's the difference, right? Europe should formulate that plan, and that plan should not involve being dependent on the transatlantic alliance anymore. And it should involve being clear to the White House that Europe does not want to be bullied. Unlike China, which has a clear plan, which involves being the adult in the room, being the reasonable one. And China should not have all these statements that they're having right now about how mortally offended they are and how they refuse to be bullied by the United States. China should be doing what Europe is doing, and Europe should be doing what China is doing.
Well, this seems like a great moment to end today's conversation on whatever is going on in today's world. I can't even summarize it anymore. If you have any questions, comments, or you heard a mistake that we've made throughout the episode, please make sure to send us an email to thewesternbubble@gmail.com, and we will try to incorporate them into our following episodes. Thank you very much to the listeners for joining us today. Make sure to join us again next week when we burst the Western bubble. That is it from my side. Balder, which closing quote did you pick for us today?
I took a quote from actually one of those horrible establishment guys, a Democratic strategist from the United States, James Carville. A lot of people will recognize him because he doesn't have any hair, and he's been around since the Clinton years, but he's still around now. However, years ago, I think this was actually during the 1990s, he said this about the bond markets, and it's very apt for what we've seen this past week, namely about the power that the bond markets have. He said, "I used to think that if there was reincarnation, I wanted to come back as the president or the pope or as a .400 baseball hitter. But now I would like to come back as the bond market. You can intimidate everybody."